Sports Talk, and it is NBA All-Star Weekend, and that is taking place in New Orleans. The 66th NBA All-Star Game set for Sunday, 8 o'clock, TNT, looking forward to that. Great activities, of course, throughout the weekend. You know about the Celebrity Game, the Slam Dunk, the Three-Point Contest, the Skills Challenge, all of that we're going to talk about with my next guest. He is a national NBA writer for the Bleacher Report, covers the NBA, and the deputy editor for NBA Math. And welcome, for the first time here on Space Coast Daily Sports Talk, a frequent guest of my other shows, Dan Favalli. Dan, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Dan. Thanks for taking time to come on. And we love your work here on Space Coast Daily Sports Talk, always following you. Give Dan a follow on Twitter, please, at Dan Favalli, F-A-V-A-L-E. And Dan, let's just get right into this thing. You look at the unofficial first half of the NBA season, because we've actually surpassed that already as we get to the NBA All-Star break. You've got Cleveland, Boston, Washington, 1-2-3 in the East, Golden State, San Antonio, and Houston, 1-2-3 in the West. Your thoughts, Dan, on the first half of the NBA season?
It was a lot of fun, and I think it was good that it unfolded the way it did with everything that's happened, because a lot of people thought that with the Warriors adding Kevin Durant to that 73-win core, we would somehow want for storylines, we would somehow want for interest. That really hasn't been the case. There is still a strong argument to be made that the Warriors are overwhelming favorites, that no one, including the Cavaliers, has the chance to beat them four times in seven tries. But you just look at everything else, the struggles in Cleveland and how they still need another piece, particularly with Kevin Love down, the rise of the Boston Celtics, even though they've been battling injuries, the rise of the Washington Wizards, even though they're a pretty shallow team, the rise of the Houston Rockets, because they weren't supposed to be that great on defense and yet they're treading water, that glut of a race for the number 8 seed in the West, the glut of a race for the bottom 3 playoff seeds in the Eastern Conference. It's all just been a lot of fun, a lot of drama, even with the trade rumors leading toward the upcoming deadline. There was just so much to talk about, digest, to watch, that it was good to reinforce that even though the Warriors exist and even though they are going to be these juggernaut favorites for years, we still have a reason to tune in elsewhere.
Talking to Dan Favalli from the Bleacher Report and deputy editor at NBA Math here on Space Coast Daily Sports Talk. Let's start in terms of individual teams here, talking about the NBA champs here. Look, you know, there was a rough stretch there for them about a month ago, a finish off heading into the All-Star break, 8-2 with a winning streak of 3 games here. But Dan, when you look at this team and the rigors of the postseason that's obviously ahead for this team, does it concern you when you see a statistic like, for example, last week when they lost to Oklahoma City? Cleveland falls to 0-7 on the second night of backs on the road. You know, you've got Kevin Love dealing with knee injuries. When you get to the playoffs, it is a grind. Is this team prepared to go through that again this year?
It helps Cleveland that the Eastern Conference still hasn't yielded that real threat. There's a strong case to be made for the Boston Celtics, an equally strong run to be made for the Toronto Raptors now that Serge Ibaka is on their roster. But Cleveland is still by far and away the best team in that conference. And over the course of 7-game series, you're going to get the best team to win more often than not. The issue for them now, as you mentioned, is that Kevin Love knee injury. You don't want to overwork LeBron James and Kyrie Irving in advance of the playoffs because you don't want them to get hurt. You don't want them to fatigue out. And they were already shouldering a pretty heavy workload, particularly LeBron, before this. They lost Matthew Dellavedova to the Milwaukee Bucks in free agency. Mo Williams unofficially retired before the start of the season. They've needed that backup playmaker. And since they haven't gotten it, you have LeBron James playing a ton of minutes. It's going to be hard for that to change now more than ever with Kevin Love out. If they can find someone on the trade market for one of their trade exceptions, or if they can surf the buyout market after the trade deadline passes and that unfolds a little bit more, it'll be to their benefit because they're not worried about losing the number one seed. They probably couldn't care less about getting home court advantage in the East, and they know they're not going to have it in the NBA Finals. They just need to get there healthy and fresh. And to do that, they are going to need to add another piece that can help out, specifically LeBron James.
Look at the Boston Celtics, 37-20, 8-2 in their last 10. Dropped their final game before the All-Star break coming in here. What can you tell us about the Boston Celtics moving into the second half of this season in terms of, you know, should the Celtics be active here at the trade deadline to add some pieces to compete with Cleveland? You look at Isaiah Thomas and what he does in fourth quarters alone this year. What do we need to know about the Boston Celtics?
They need help to still beat the Cavaliers, and I think now there will be an incentive more than ever for them to go all in on a trade that consolidates some of their assets. But team president Danny Ainge is a guy that likes to maintain flexibility. They are approaching sort of a closing window of opportunity with their below-market deals on Avery Bradley and Isaiah Thomas, both of whom will be free agents in 2018. This summer is when they'll have to be super active. But right now, I wouldn't expect them to make a huge move or give up anything substantial because they're going to want cap space to try and chase another top guy this summer. And then they'll still be able to turn around and put together a great trade package for a star. I think that's their plan in the grand scheme. Immediately, I think they'll look for some defensive rebounding help, maybe some rim protection. I expect Taj Gibson to be a name that's tossed around there a lot between now and that February 23rd trade deadline. For them, the key is letting their defense come together in the meantime. They've done a better job over their last 12 games, checking in at 7th in points allowed per 100 possessions. They've done that in spite of injuries at different points to Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, now Jaylen Brown. That's a big deal, but they need to keep it up consistently because their offense has been great, particularly when Isaiah Thomas is in the game. They've just yet to figure out a continuous way to cover up for his defensive liabilities, where everyone's switching and things get sort of too hectic for them. But if they can continue defending like they have over this 12-game stretch, they're going to be Cleveland's biggest threat in that Eastern Conference.
About here in the Eastern Conference, talking to Dan Favalli, covers the NBA for the Bleacher Report, deputy editor at NBA Math. Great stuff there. Be sure to check that out as well. With the Wizards, a team near and dear to my heart, I still call them the Bullets. I'm from that area. First of all, John Wall, where does he rank in the NBA? You know, we like to talk about what player ranks where in the NBA. Is Wall a top three player, or is he top five in your, or where is he rank in the NBA these days to you?
He's certainly in that conversation for top three point guards or top five point guards. I don't think he falls into that category overall. He's probably just outside that top 10 star ranking, maybe in the top 15. He's a phenomenal offensive player. His jump shot is still not where it needs to be. He's more confident in it. You can see he won't hesitate as much when he needs to pull up. But you want to see a more consistent clip from three-point range and on mid-range jumpers. You want to see a more engaged John Wall for a few seasons on defense. He's been great there this season, but it kind of seems to go back and forth with him from season to season. Maybe now that the Wizards are contending for one of those top three seeds in the East, we'll see him kick it up even further a notch. He certainly has all the tools to enter that top 10 star conversation, but I don't know if we'll ever see him get into the top five or top three discussion just because of how much the league values three-pointers right now, floor spacing, or dominant defense like the kind that Giannis Antetokounmpo would play and being able to guard multiple positions, which is something he can't really do. He can stay on point guards, which remains one of the deepest talented positions in the league, but it gets a little iffy if you're trying to switch him to shooting guards or small forwards. And that's nitpicking, but it does hurt his status overall. Still, we're talking about a guy who's right there in that top 15 debate, and that's huge for the Wizards because the hardest thing to do in this league is get that top 15 player, and they have one in John Wall.
And you suffered just a gut-wrenching defeat a couple of weeks ago when LeBron James pulled up and made as good a three-point shot as you're ever going to see in the history of this league. You know, to send the game into overtime, and then at that point the Cavaliers took over. But you talk about the Wizards real quick here. Finish up with them: Beal, Porter, Markieff Morris, and that thing, you know, they're good. But you mentioned the depth on this team earlier, and that it just doesn't exist. Do you see Washington actively involved in the trade market? I don't. I mean, just because they just don't. historically. But what do you see from this team?
I believe they'll certainly try and be active. I'm not sure if they have the assets to pull off a deal, but you hit it on the head with the bench. They've been fantastic since Christmas, but when you look at the numbers, their reserves have played fewer minutes than any bench units outside of the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are coached by the rest-averse Tom Thibodeau. That's not a conversation you want to be in. Your guys are young enough to where they can shoulder these heavy minute burdens, but we're talking about a Wizards team that wants to play into May, into June, hopefully. You want to try and get your stars some rest before then. You want to know that you have an eighth, a ninth, a tenth guy to fall back on certain nights. That's why I would expect them to be more aggressive than maybe a lot of people would think they should be at the trade deadline. But again, it comes back to assets, and they don't have many. Andrew Nicholson's cheapo deal is probably their best asset that they can partner with a first-round pick or a couple second-round picks. Maybe that gets you in the conversation for a Lou Williams, though he doesn't really help you defensively in the second unit, and he can't play with Bradley Beal. Tabo Cephalosha is a name that I've just floated out there based on pure speculation because he would be good hitting wide-open threes while also playing defense when he's healthy. Those are the scale moves that they'll look for, though. They're going to be these understated mid-end guys that they'll target to sort of flesh out the roster because those are the most realistic targets for them. They can't make a bigger splash than that.
Switching gears here to the Western Conference, talking to Dan Favale from the Bleacher Report, Golden State. Look, dude, obviously, the talk about the chase of the greatest team of all time, that's out of the question. To me, it seems like, you know what, Dan, that's okay because that's a pressure that now they can just don't have to worry about and concentrate and focus on winning the NBA championship. But I think the number that I am completely blown away by, I think the last count I had was 8 victories by at least 30 points this season. That's the NBA's highest total for any team since the 87-88 Celtics. How good is this team?
This team is phenomenal, and we can even say that they haven't reached their full potential just yet. They're getting there in the sense that they're figuring out how Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant can work together without making too many sacrifices off one another. Their defense is jostling for a position with the San Antonio Spurs for the top mark in the league. They already have the best offense. And this is their first year together. If they keep this core intact, as we all expect them to do, they're probably only going to improve over the next year or two. And that's a pretty scary notion when you consider that they could still pull off 69 to 70 victories this year. Imagine a team that's even better than that next year or the year after. I kind of expect within these next two seasons that we're going to be talking about that 73-win mark is something they'll end up chasing just by default because they are just so wildly talented.
And isn't that really what the whole issue was a couple of weeks ago with LeBron James and his frustration level and what he was talking about? Certainly, I'm not going to get into the whole Charles Barkley thing because that's ridiculous in and of itself. But, you know, you talk about LeBron, and he, you know, Dan, I'm sure it runs through his mind that he knows he's on a collision course with this team, likely here in the NBA Finals this year. And he's got to know that as they sit right now, they need to start doing some things. And isn't that what this is about? Is LeBron James is thinking exactly what you just said?
Absolutely. He even pretty much came out and said it. He'll never credit another team like that, really. But he's talking about his age, how he's going to turn 33 next year. That matters to him. He has his 3 championship rings. He won one in Cleveland, which really counts as 2 or 3 considering the context. But he wants more. He's chasing Jordan. He's chasing Magic. And while I think we've moved beyond defining player legacies by their ring count, it still is an integral part of the discussion, something that he recognizes. They've built this team to win now, and he understands that the standard remains the Warriors, even though they're the reigning champions. What I don't know if he understands or what I don't know if he or Cleveland will ever figure out is how they're supposed to get on the Warriors' level again. They've sort of constrained themselves financially for the next few years to come, and it's only going to get harder. I don't know if they have that move in them to where they can pick up an extra piece via trade or the buyout market. What they may rely on, and what LeBron James's teams often do rely on when they get a little deeper into his tenure, are those ring chasers, those veterans who still have play left in the tank. They're not in their primes by any means, but they're not on the complete back end of them either. Taking those substantial pay cuts to come play with him, to come chase those rings. And his greatest argument might be if the Cavaliers meet the Warriors again, because then players around the league will recognize that to take down this giant, some of us are going to need to consolidate elsewhere. So maybe that might be the best route for him. But when you're looking at the Cavaliers' roster right now, maybe the gap isn't as big between them and the Warriors as some people think, but that's certainly not a series you would expect to go 7 games. It would almost be surprising if it went 6 with the way that the Warriors play.
What about the gap between Golden State and San Antonio? Look, Greg Popovich, obviously, he set a new league record a couple of weeks ago for the most regular season coaching victories with one franchise. He was 11-28. Just an amazing, amazing basketball coach. Not so much fun to interview, but, you know, look, if ever there was a team that could figure out something in a short series, maybe it's Pop, maybe it's the Spurs. You tell me, Dan.
Absolutely. A lot of people go back to the Rockets, which is fair. They play more the Warriors style, and a lot of people still believe that you might need to go three-pointer for three-pointer with the Warriors. The Spurs don't shoot a ton of three-pointers by today's standards. They don't play very fast by today's standards. But they can disrupt any offense from its flow. They can force the Warriors to execute more in the half court, where Golden State will still excel, but it's not their free-flowing up-and-down model that they're used to. If the game becomes a grind, if the series becomes a grind, that's favoring San Antonio, which likes to limit possessions so that you're by default limiting the opportunities of your opponent, and the game becomes who can be more efficient in a slower contest. That's what the Spurs are doing. It's very clear, and they're doing a phenomenal job at it. They are clearly, to me, the biggest threat to the Warriors in the West, or perhaps the league overall, even though a lot of people don't think that style will hold up. And to that point, the Spurs do look like they need maybe a more athletic four or a wing that allows Kawhi Leonard to play more four when they have to go against smaller lineups and they're not able to dictate the pace. Because if you get into a series with Golden State and they throw out those lineups where their power forward and center are Draymond Green and Kevin Durant, you arguably can't keep either Pau Gasol or LaMarcus Aldridge on the floor. You can't keep David Lee and Dwayne Denman on the floor. You need that extra guy so that you can combat the Warriors in the most drastic circumstances, and that seems to be what they're missing. They are perfectly built to disrupt the Warriors, but they still need a piece or maybe two to where they might also be able to match the Warriors on their own playing field if the situation demands it.
Now, Dan, this season so far, there's been a lot of great surprises in this league. I, like you, have thought that the first half or the faux first half of the NBA season has been great to watch. But I can't think of any, especially living where I live, of any more of a bigger disappointment this year than the Orlando Magic. It is head-scratching to me. What is going on with the Orlando Magic? You cannot continue to bring in new coaches. Frank Vogel's there. Are we at a point now? I mean, should the Magic right now, as we sit here, just cut ties with Rob Hennigan and move forward here in the second half of the season to look to rebuild this franchise instead of just taking an offseason to do it? Why not take an offseason and a half of an NBA season to try to figure this out? What's your thoughts on what the hell's wrong with the Orlando Magic?
Yeah, it's surprising to me that Rob Hennigan's heat doesn't seem hotter. We all talk about it, but you don't have those reports that the Magic are ready to move on. And the fact that they allowed him to be the one that brokered the Serge Ibaka trade the second time where they got Terrence Ross on the pick, it makes you think that he's safe through at least the end of the season. They haven't hit on draft picks, and that's been their biggest downfall. They've gotten a bunch of these top five selections, and they haven't turned them into legitimate cornerstones. You trade Victor Oladipo and what turned out to be Domantas Sabonis for Ibaka, but then you go after Biyombo as well, giving him $68 million. Combine that with Nikola Vucevic. That moves Aaron Gordon out of position, who looked like your most valuable cornerstone at one point, and now he's suffering on the offensive end because he's constantly playing the three. He's been asked to defend some twos. That's not a situation he should be in. Elfrid Payton looks like he may have peaked or that he won't get much better. Mario Hezonja is almost a ghost in Frank Vogel's rotation, at some point, when you have this many lottery picks, when you've had as many top five selections over the past half decade as the Magic have, you need to turn one of them into a legitimate star, if not a megastar. And the Magic have yet to do that. And it seems that this has created a sense of urgency to the extent where they're going to be way too aggressive on the trade and free agency markets. There was the rumor from ESPN.com's Mark Stein that they're looking to target Reggie Jackson of the Detroit Pistons in the trade. Yeah, he might help you with your dribble penetration and your offense a little bit, but you still have Elfrid Payton, who's going to be extension eligible this summer, a restricted free agent in 2018. What is your long-term plan? They don't seem to have a direction, and that's what they need to figure out between now and the summer, with or without Rob Hennigan. The clear answer, as you alluded to, though, is they need to strip this thing down to the studs, try and get as many picks as possible as they can, maybe keep Aaron Gordon in the fold, and just try and once more hit on a success story with a top five pick. They haven't done that, and they need to, but yet they seem to be actively avoiding that situation now because they've been so unsuccessful there in the past.
Finishing up here, a couple more here for Dan Favalli. Covers the NBA for the Bleacher Report, and I'm going to tell you, there's nobody out there better than Dan at what he does. His articles are fantastic. I'm here to tell you, it's what I read to get called up on the NBA. So make sure you check him out on Twitter as well, at Dan Favalli, F-A-V-A-L-E. Yeah, and Dan, here's the thing, you know, about Hennigan is that general managers, great point about the draft picks because, you know, it is the general managers that bring in these scouting departments. It's their men that go out and do these jobs. I mean, everything points to the Magic having to make a move here. Whether they do it sooner or later, I mean, I don't know what the difference is. I guess the other thing, too, here, and you mentioned, there just doesn't – it's dead. There's no core to this team. There's no identity. The other thing that's amazing is that this is a team that's got a better road record than they do a home record. I mean, that's mind-boggling to me.
Right, and that kind of happens with teams in their situation where they're not rebuilding, but they're bad, and they're not exceeding expectations. It's almost easier – they're not meeting expectations. They're just coming up so short. It's almost easier to win on the road away from that pressure because you're not supposed to win on the road because you're bad. And what I've noticed from them as well, they're not a good offensive or defensive team on a night-to-night basis, but they have these random games, usually on the road, where they either have a scoring outburst or they all of a sudden lock down defensively. It's one of those ineffable, indescribable things, and it's just so bizarre to watch. A lot of it just seems to come back to they don't have that core, they don't have the direction, and they're being pulled in so many different ones right now. You have Vucevic and Biyombo who don't fit together, and yet neither of them are really young enough to build around, or Biyombo, who's still young, isn't really someone you build around. You have these youngsters in Elfrid Payton and Aaron Gordon, but you're going to have to reinvest in them each in a year or two. You bring in Terrence Ross, who's on a good contract, but he's not exactly young, and yet he's not a building block. It's like, what are you doing? And then they go and they're giving C.J. Watson minutes over Elfrid Payton. It doesn't make any sense. This would be easier to accept their current state if they were at least like, hey, we're committing to this. But they're being pulled again in these two different directions where, well, we kind of need to rebuild, but we kind of want to compete. And now they're just stuck in the middle where they seem like they're bad enough to get a top pick, but they don't want to stay bad enough to get that top pick, so they're going to chase these win-now moves, and the optics just aren't good.
Frank Vogel must go home at night, put his feet up, and go, I don't know, I don't have any idea. talking to Dan Favalli, the Bleacher Report here. All right, let's jump into All-Star Weekend here. We mentioned the Magic, Aaron Gordon. I personally thought he got ripped off last year. You know, it's just a homerism in me here. Who's your pick in the slam dunk? Aaron Gordon, DeAndre Jordan, Derek Jones, and Glenn Robinson, I think, is the other one in it. Who you got?
Gordon would be my first choice, and I agree with you that he was kind of snubbed last year. His dunks were fantastic. My issue is I wonder if he'll be able to top those. I think he's hinted at him having some stuff up his sleeve, but it's going to be really difficult to exceed the level of excitement and creativity from last year's contest. If there's anyone who can do it, though, knowing the dunks that he pulled out last year, it's him. The other guy I would watch, though, is Derek Jones. That guy is a monster in the D League with the way he dunks. And unlike these other guys where they're in the NBA already, and while this dunk contest can help you, it can also hurt you if you don't do well. He might be more willing to journey even further outside the box than Aaron Gordon did last year. And that's kind of an exciting thing to think about. So, again, it comes back to me for it comes back to Aaron Gordon for me, but I would keep my eye on Derrick Jones. He looks like he might be one of those sleeper picks.
Who's the Swedish shooter that's going to nail the most from three-point land tomorrow?
I'm going to go to two different extremes. Klay Thompson is either going to defend his crown or it's just going to be Nick Young, because this seems like such a Nick Young contest to win. And as we saw last year and we've seen in the past with Stephen Curry, it's not always the best shooter that actually wins this competition. So my gut is that Klay Thompson does this during actual games where he's pretty much just grabbing passes off the rack and hitting wide open threes that he could repeat fairly easily. But Nick Young is just one of those streaky shooters, and this seems like a platform where he might thrive amid all the attention. So those are my two picks. Again, it's traveling on two different ends of the spectrum, but it's just a gut feeling.
And the final question I have for you, Dan, is what should we look forward to here as we get come out of the All-Star break? What are one or two storylines we need to really keep our eye on?
Well, one of them is the All-Star game itself, because I want to see if Steve Kerr is going to play Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant together. Maybe even throw out that Warriors lineup with Draymond Green, Stephen Curry, Klay Durant, and Russell Westbrook, because that would be a fantastic discussion topic to come out and finish the second half of the season with. The other thing I do want to see, though, is what's going on with the Clippers. Are they going to be able to tread water until Chris Paul comes back? Once he does come back, are they going to prove that they're on the same level? Not only the Spurs or the Warriors, but even the Jazz or the Rockets. Their appeal has sort of fallen behind both of those teams in recent weeks as well. And if they don't, if this is a team that gets bounced in the first round or they get to the second round but don't put up much of a fight against one of those other Western Conference contenders, they're going to break up somehow. Maybe they bring back both Blake Griffin and Chris Paul, who are free agents, and trade DeAndre Jordan to try and turn him into a wing and then maybe just a more specialized big. Maybe they let Chris Paul off because he's older. Maybe Blake Griffin decides to go elsewhere. But if this team cannot put forth a very competitive second-round series or even make it out of that second round, they're not going to look even close to the same next year. I really want to see how the rest of the season plays out for them with so much at stake.
I lied. I got one more for you here real quick. Miami Heat, real fast, Dan. They had that extended winning streak. What do you see happening for the Heat coming up here in the second half? They've snuck into some power polls in terms of, you know, top 10, 11 teams in the league. What's going to happen down in South Beach?
Earlier today, I actually predicted that the Heat are going to make the playoffs, if only because some of the teams in front of them just aren't very convincing right now. The Bucks lost Jabari Parker, have been a mess when they have to play close games down the stretch of fourth quarters. The Bulls are just so hot and cold that I don't know if they're actually going to be a playoff team. The Detroit Pistons have been slogging through these offensive issues all season, and I don't think they have the personnel as constructed to fix them. There's just a lot of overlapping talent there. And then you have the Heat, who have figured things out on defense. They've been a great defensive team for most of this season. They struggled for a little bit. And now they're figuring out a way to kind of manufacture enough offense. Goran Dragic has been fantastic. I think you can argue that this has been the best season of his career. And the things he's doing is completely sustainable because this is stuff we saw him do in Phoenix. It's stuff he's done for pretty much all of this season. You bake in the play of Deion Waiters and James Johnson, both of whom are playing for their next contract this summer. At least one of them should continue at this pace all year. Hassan Whiteside has been hot and cold, but he's still able to function within at a semi-high level, but within that clunky combinations that are sometimes on the floor for the Heat. They've started shooting threes a little bit better of late, but they're not laden with a plethora of guys who are going to light it up from beyond the arc every night. That sometimes impacts his play. But you look at the job that Eric Spoelstra has done just to get this team to mostly play really tough, really energetic, really engaged defense on a night-to-night basis. That's going to be big for them when they only have two games separating them from that final number eight seed. And with just watching them over these last few weeks, I would almost be surprised if they're not able to usurp two to three of the teams in front of them right now, specifically Detroit and Milwaukee, but maybe also Chicago.
Dan, just great stuff. I mean, I always have a blast talking to you, and thanks for coming on the show. He is Dan Favalli, the Bleacher Report, and give him a follow on Twitter, at Dan Favalli, D-A-N-F-A-V-A-L-E, and, of course, the deputy editor as well at NBA Math. Dan, thanks so much for taking time out of, I know what is a busy weekend for you, to come on the Space Coast Daily Sports Talk. And, man, we're going to get you back on a couple more times here now that we're rolling five nights a week, and I appreciate you.
Most definitely. Thank you for having me, as always. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, too.